I think I had 15 possible interviews from all over, from Phoenix to Florida to one in Canada. There were so many different locations. And fortunately for me, by luck, the first one was Charleston. And my wife and I came here in March of 1986. And we were just overwhelmed. It was a beautiful state. The people were absolutely amazing. And it was so different from the experiences in New York. I mean, the hustle and bustle, this was just so beautiful. And they offered us the position on Saturday night after the pretty much the Sabbath weekend. And we couldn't say fast enough. We were told not to. We were told we have to go to the other interviews and stuff. But on the flight back, my wife and I said, do we like it here? Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and say yes. So I called back Sunday night and said, if you still want me, I want to be here. And then I told the seminary, and they weren't too happy that I didn't want to go to the other interviews. But we were happy.
What did you expect? Did you have expectations? In 1986, you moved down to Charleston to lead this synagogue. What did you expect?
It's a good question. I was 24 years old. I don't know if I had expectations beyond 1987. I really didn't know. I mean, we just had gotten married 2 weeks prior. So it was just brand new. There was an excitement, though. There was such an excitement coming to West Virginia. I guess maybe people who live here understand that. And people that come for a visit appreciate that. There is just something magical about the people here. And even though we heard all the negative economic news, the depressed area, we didn't see that. We just saw so much potential. We just saw so many interconnections between different people of different denominations and faith. And coming from a very traditional background, that was both a little bit scary, but kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, my first few calls were coming from ministers welcoming me, and I thought that was strange. My colleague, Rabbi Kohler, who now is retired and lives in Richmond, he wrote me a letter when I got the position welcoming me. He wrote me a beautiful Hebrew that I could barely read because his Hebrew is wonderful. And it was so different than what the experiences you would hear throughout the country where it's competitive, it's very fast-paced, and you're going to be burned out. So we came with expectations that this was almost heaven.
How's the synagogue today, all these years later?
Fairly stable, economically very stable. The numbers are still a challenge. It's a challenge everywhere. We're holding our own, but you don't see a lot of young people coming to West Virginia, and there, as a result of the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. The Jewish community, not just in West Virginia, but throughout the country, is the oldest minority population. So that feeds into that difficulty, and then you add to the West Virginia narrative. That makes it very a challenge. Mm-hmm. The excitement is we're finding more and more people, both Jews who are rediscovering their faith at a later age, and we're also finding people that are not necessarily becoming Jewish but feel the interconnectedness of the Jewish faith with their own traditions. And to the great credit of my synagogue, they've allowed me to kind of open up the doors of the synagogue. For example, yesterday morning we had our Bible class, our Torah class. Our Torah class often has just as many people not of the Jewish faith and of the Jewish faith. So when you come and listen to the Torah class, it's exciting. It would not have been that way if we just kept ourselves very insular.
What is the impact of consolidations and closures of other synagogues throughout West Virginia?
We have two in Charleston. We have one in Huntington. There recently, the one in Parkersburg just closed. There is a congregation in Beckley. There is one in Bluefield. It's struggling. It's trying the best it can to survive. There is a congregation in Morgantown and a congregation in Wheeling. And each of them face their own unique challenges. Some of them are a little bit more financially secure, so they can survive despite the numbers. Some of them are just hanging on, but they don't have the lay leadership that have the ability to maintain the traditions that are necessary. And it's difficult for them to hire a rabbi, a full-time rabbi. So they make do with a student rabbi that can only come maybe once a month.
Mm-hmm. What is your relationship with other religions in the Charleston area?
It's been part of my growth, and I think, again, I would not have experienced this if I would have gone to the larger communities, and that's why I'm always feel very blessed by God that I'm in West Virginia. Churches have opened their doors. They want to discover Judaism. The mosque wants to develop relations with the Jewish community. What that has done is allowed us to find our commonalities, what we share, the same frustrations we have, the same issues. And it's been a wonderful dialogue and conversation. And what I've enjoyed about that is I've grown spiritually because of that, because I've approached God, I've approached religion through one narrative. I haven't weakened that narrative by embracing and looking at others. In fact, what it's done is it's enriching, it's, if you will, colorizing my religion and mm-hmm. broadening it and making it more special. Mm-hmm. The more I touch other religions, the closer I feel to God. Mm-hmm. And that's been my experience, and I can't get enough of it. I wish I could clone myself and go to different churches every Sunday and just sit in the pews and enjoy the services and then go at 1:30 to the mosque and then go to whatever different service I can, because with each one, I walk away with a greater appreciation of that denomination and that religion. But then I come to my own and I see the connectiveness that we all share with God.
Future plans for the synagogue, the congregation, and the community. What do you see out there?
A lot more outreach, a lot more opening the doors to our congregation. Again, not necessarily for missionary purposes, though Judaism welcomes new adherents just like any other faith. But I think we just grow the more we share. I do many things that I enjoy. What I enjoy more than anything is my classes, because those classes are the great entry for these dialogues. Yesterday we had two people that have never been to our Torah class, okay? They came to the class not knowing what to expect. I think they walked away with a great appreciation not only of Judaism, but more so they took something home with them. But more so, their conversation brought something fresh to the Torah that I've seen for years. It's something I didn't think about it that way, and I couldn't have thought that way because my experiences are different than their experiences. So I'm hoping in the next, maybe not 30 years, but the next 15, 20 years, that we can continue to have classes. My dream one day is, and I don't know if it's possible because our clergy are so, there's so many things that our clergy have to do, but I would love to have weekly clergy get-togethers, public forums where we each take our own faith traditions or more so our sacred text and share with each other. A minister will take a section from the gospel, and here's an imam, a rabbi, a Unitarian minister. Each of them, how do you look at this text? What does this text speak to you? And then the following week, the imam brings the Quran. We all can look at that. I can bring the Torah one week. And in a public setting, so other people can understand that we share so much, we take so much from each other, and we learn so much from each other.
Can that happen? Are you going to make that happen?
I'd like to. Mm-hmm. We have a working title. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be called Text in the City. I mean, we can do a whole bunch of different names for it. Text support. I mean, we could just do some great stuff. The joy of text. I mean, we could have some good stuff.
Rabbi Victor Yerecki, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.